for argument, Melissa Bellew versus Gonzalez. Mr. Ryland.
Please the court, Jeff Ryland on behalf of petitioner Castroite Musabeliu, his wife Azji, and his daughter Ladina. In this case, the immigration judge wrongly denied Mr. Musabeliu's petition for asylum. The BIA summarily affirmed that decision, therefore this court reviews the IJ's decision as a final agency determination. The first error that the immigration judge committed in rendering his decision was finding the petitioner's actions did not constitute whistleblowing and therefore an expression of political opinion. This court hasn't developed a test for determining when whistleblowing constitutes political opinion. The immigration judge in this case adopted the standard announced in the Ninth Circuit case Grava, where they said when the whistleblowing involves alleged corruption that is inextricably intertwined with government operation, then the exposure and prosecution of such abuse of the public trust is necessarily political.
Is this the general Musabeliu's wife and daughter? Is this who these three are?
Yes, and the claims of the wife and daughter.
So the daughter was one. Is she studying in the United States and
yes,
going to college?
Yes, sir.
How old are these people?
The daughter is 22. The general and his wife are in their mid to late 50s.
How is he persecuted? I mean, that's a key concept in this kind of case.
Yes, Your Honor.
There were some shots taken at his convoy at one point, and we don't know who took the shots, and somebody took a shot at him, apparently, at another point. Is that the extent of the persecution or what?
The past persecution, yes, Your Honor, those are the two most prevalent instances of it. The first one occurred in January of 2001 when he was returning from a demonstration. In the record on page 190, the commander for the chief of police in that area issued a report that states that this was an assassination, after interviewing with the witnesses, that he considered this to be an attempt on the life of the general. The description he gave of the events was the general's car was out front and the two other vehicles were 70 to 100 meters behind that. The assailants attacked his car, and then when it was clear that car stopped, the other cars kept coming toward the scene, and then the assailants fled. The second incident was on the...
Do you know who the attackers were?
No, sir. The second incident of past persecution in the record occurred on the very day that he left the prosecutor's office.
Let me come back to Judge Cuddy's question. How does one call it an incident of persecution if we don't know who shot or why? I assume that there are probably a lot of people who are unhappy with Albanian generals. Perhaps people previously persecuted themselves by the army. Since we in prior immigration cases have said that the Albanian army was itself persecuted.
Well, in this case, he signed a petition stating that he had never persecuted, and there was nothing in his military record that ever showed he was reprimanded for persecution or that there are any incidents reported.
Yes, because persecution of Muslims, for example, was government policy in Albania.
Now, the second incident, I think, is more convincing. On the very day that he returned from meeting with the government prosecutor regarding his allegations of corruption, arms trafficking, the diversion of humanitarian aid, on April 6, 2001, he was shot at outside of his home. This, in combination with the evidence in the record that other individuals who have tried to bring allegations of corruption against the Minister of Defense at the time, Laurent Hasdaraga, have been persecuted. For instance, Colonel Haika in 1998 met with government prosecutors regarding alleged illegal arms trafficking directed by the minister. He was assassinated just a few days after meeting with the government prosecutors. General Aguif Sikasheli filed a complaint and raised strong fraud allegations against Minister Hajduraga. He was removed from his position of authority, and according to the article in the record, the Attorney General's office commented that he knew too much about Minister Hajduraga. He was later beaten, his home was burglarized, and he was forced to flee the country. And the judge characterized these past incidents as merely anecdotal, that individuals who opposed Minister Hajduraga suffered persecution. I think they go well beyond that. Here the court adopted the standard for whistleblowing from the Grava case in the Ninth Circuit, and that was that it was inextricably intertwined with government operation. And it was on page 13 and 14 of his decision that he found that the petitioner's actions in this case did not constitute whistleblowing. He began by stating that the respondent did little to express an opinion upon corruption. Therefore, it didn't count as an expression of political opinion. But in the Grava case, they said that when the corruption that's complained about is inextricably intertwined with government operations, that makes it in and of itself necessarily political, and then you don't have to concomitantly espouse a political view or a political opinion. Second statement on that page is, he says it's not political opinion because it wasn't a public condemnation. But here, there were plenty of news reports about Minister Hajduraga being involved in numerous, in one article they called it a sack of scandals, from the diversion of humanitarian aid to illegal arms trafficking. And he did his part here through meeting with government prosecutors to provide information.
Is a newspaper report part of the record here? Did he present that?
Example, page 41 of the record is the article about the sack of scandals that Hajduraga was involved in. Page 47 and 48 of the record talks about General Agif Sikashelli. And on page 173, they talk about the incident with Colonel Haika. There's no report in the record of the shooting on Mr. Musabello, correct?
Well, supposedly a pretty high profile event, wasn't it?
According to the testimony of one of the witnesses, it did appear in the media, and that he saw it on a privately run television station. He said he did not respond that it ever appeared in print media. Finally, I believe that the corruption here is inextricably intertwined with the operation of government. It was being conducted through the Ministry of Defense, through Minister Hajduraga, with the use of the Albanian army and the authority entrusted to Minister Hajduraga as a public official. And this wasn't an isolated event. It was, quote, in the article, a sack of scandals that the ministry was involved with, from the diversion of aid to illegal arms trafficking. The judge's ruling that there was no fear of future persecution was based on two facts that he found which are clearly wrong from the record. First of all, he found that Minister Hajduraga no longer held a position of authority within Albania. Therefore, he could not pose a threat of persecution. And second, and in actuality, he was the acting Minister of Foreign Affairs at the time. And second, the Minister Hajduraga had been granted, quote, some sort of amnesty. Therefore, he wouldn't have any inclination to want to punish or persecute the petitioner here. And that was also untrue, since the only amnesty he received covered penalties for crimes 3 years or less. And illegal arms trafficking is a greater penalty than that. I see my time's up. I'd like to reserve
the
floor for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Warren. Mr. Wood?
Justice, representing the respondents in this matter, the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Your Honors, despite the opportunities to prove a credible and plausible asylum claim before an asylum officer, an immigration judge, and the Board of Immigration.
I have a suggestion for you. You can take this, you can tell immigration judges this, and I guarantee it will increase their permanence rate. That is, never begin a sentence in one of these opinions with if. If the defense minister was actually granted amnesty by the government, there would be no reason why the respondent would be targeted for harm. That's ridiculous, right?
I think
that's ridiculous, because this is Albania. There's a rich anthropological literature on feuds in Albania. If you're a big shot and you're fingered for corruption, you get demoted, you have to get an amnesty, you're going to be extremely angry.
I don't see that in the record, Your Honor. It's
the point is, when these immigration judges start speculating about conditions in foreign countries, they're quite ridiculous. That is, their statements show a complete ignorance of conditions in a foreign country. And the other if sentence that struck me was the one about the convoy. What was that? We see this in all these opinions. It's just so unprofessional. Where's that? Yes. What is it? It was a given. It was not an F. Convoy was returning to Tirana at an uncertain time and an uncertain date. Now, is that meant to imply that this was a secret convoy and nobody knew? And given the fact that the respondent was traveling with a number of military men, this court does not believe that shooting randomly at the first vehicle. Of course, the argument is that it wasn't random, it was shooting deliberately. So it's just illogical. I mean, there are perfectly valid points in this argument, in this opinion by Judge Van Oker. But every time he starts speculating and offering his notion of plausibility, that's where it has no hinges with reality.
Well, the only respondent with the respect, Your Honor, is that there's a difference between speculation and inferences based on the evidence. But again, I'm not going to offer a particular decision. Your point has been well taken, and I will pass it on if I can. However, as you know, there's virtual evidence in this case that substantially supports the immigration judge's finding that the petitioner has not been persecuted based on his being a whistleblower. In fact, petitioner has failed to establish that his case, his corruption allegations were intertwined explicitly.
What is the board's view about the extent to which whistleblowers are protected by the asylum statutes?
The immigration judge.
I didn't ask about the immigration judge. I asked about the board.
I do not know of any published decision about whistleblowers, Your Honor. The immigration judge was...
Why are we in a situation in which, in order to figure out the law about whistleblowers and asylum, the board is citing decisions of the Ninth Circuit rather than its own decisions?
That's correct, Your Honor.
You can't answer the question, why, with the response, that's correct. Why are we in this position, which one might think is a matter of administrative law, is bizarre? The agency is supposed to take a position, then under the Chevron doctrine, the courts figure out whether that position is limited or not. Here, that doesn't seem to be happening.
Well, I beg to differ. We have been
beg to differ. So the board has taken a position. I mean,
the agency has not. I realize the decision.
You asked about the board.
The board in this case, you asked
about this case.
I'm not sure. The board in this case reviewed the immigration judges.
So they didn't discuss whistleblowing. They didn't mention it.
They did not establish a legal principle in this case.
It affirmed and adopted the immigration judge's decision, including the provisions in the Ninth Circuit case. And I'd also point to this circuit's decisions in which this board.
They didn't say it adopted it.
I would point to the first sentence where we have reviewed the record and we responded.
Right, that's different from adoption. That's different. If they adopted the immigration judge's opinion, you could say it was an oral opinion and so on. Or if they adopted it, they made it their opinion. And everything in their opinion now speaks for the board. But they didn't say that.
Well, I think the point of the last sentence, where the response is presented no arguments of appeal, which persuade us that the decision should be disturbed.
Yes, of course, but you understand there is a difference between affirming and adopting. Don't you understand that?
Yes,
there's a difference, right?
Yes, and I believe...
You don't realize there's a difference there?
Yes, I do, Your Honor.
Well, they didn't adopt the decision of the immigration judge.
They didn't agree with the decision of the immigration
judge. They didn't adopt it, right? They wrote a one-paragraph summary affirmance. We don't know whether they agreed with the immigration judge's conception of whistleblowing. For all we know, they don't think whistleblowing can ever be persecution.
It had to know the review of the legal issues presented to it. And the underlying issue in this case is whether the petitioner established a well-founded fear of persecution based on his being a whistleblower or past persecution. Based on the fact that that legal question was, in fact, briefed by the petitioner and discussed by the immigration judge, and then affirmed by the immigration appeals under this legal review, we submit that the board clearly has considered all the issues and felt the immigration judge was correct.
There's nothing to suggest they agreed with everything the immigration judge... All they agreed with was the bottom line.
There are several reasons for thinking the bottom line might be correct, independent of this legal question about what constitutes persecution. And Judge Posner suggested that you might tell the immigration judge's outright opinions. And I suggest that you suggest to the board that it resolve the legal questions. And we had a labor board case earlier this morning. There was a dispute about how the board had applied its doctrine. But there was no doubt what the doctrine, what the legal view of the labor board was on questions like that. One of our major problems with the Board of Immigration Appeals is that we, in case after case, don't have a clue what the Board of Immigration Appeals' view of important legal questions is.
But Your Honor, this court is supported and upheld the streamlining provisions that the Attorney General has allowed in the board to review cases.
I think you're completely missing the point.
No, I do understand your points very well.
The board doesn't have to write long opinions in all cases. All Judge Easterbrook is suggesting is that when there's a recurrent legal question, which is probably within the discretionary authority of the board to resolve. So actually, the whole meaning of persecution, we had a recent case, which turns out the board has never defined persecution.
That's correct.
Well, it's never defined whistleblowing. Now, it doesn't have to write an opinion in every case. In one of 1,000 cases, you think it might say, it might decide to write a full opinion about a recurrent issue. Doesn't do that.
How many precedential opinions does the Board of Immigration Appeals issue every year?
I cannot answer that, Your Honor. I don't know.
Board of Immigration Appeals has got, what, 15 judges on it?
I believe that's correct.
I think the answer is something like 20, because I've looked through their volumes of published opinions. They're quite scanty. The National Labor Relations Board, which has 5 members, issues hundreds of published presidential opinions a year. It's very hard to figure out what is going on at the Labor Board. The Board of Immigration Appeals. The Occupational Health and Safety Administration, which has 1 administrator, issues hundreds of presidential opinions a year.
Right, but also the way we can review it
gets the important issues resolved. The reason why you're having so much trouble in this court and others is because the board isn't squarely facing the questions presented to it.
Well, there are certain situations in other courts where they decide that presidential decisions aren't necessary because it may not be the exact case. The facts may not be specifically...
If you take up in some case the question when, if at all, is whistleblowing protected under the anti-persecution rule, you resolve that in some case, you can then apply it in 1,000 others by unpublished order. But there's been no effort to grapple with that in the first place.
But, Your Honor, I don't know how many times or how many cases regarding whistleblowers have been presented before the Board of Immigration.
Well, it's enough that it's come up in multiple circuits, leading the Board to rely on decisions of the courts rather than the courts to evaluate the legal position adopted by the agency, which is where I began. It's the reverse of what's contemplated in administrative law.
But I would bring the Board's attention, Your Honor, to this Court's own precedent in which it has addressed the issue of whether or not a whistleblower perhaps...
But you're completely missing the point that this is a judgment that's supposed to be made in the first instance by the administrative agency. It's not a statutory defined term. What regulations?
The streamlining regulations.
Streamlining does not excuse them from the duty to exercise their authority to fill the gaps in the statute.
Well, I'm saying that apparently the difference of opinion on this decision is the Board's done. But the regulations...
Look, the Office of Immigration and Relations and Justice Department seems not to have grasped the fact that there are serious problems of professionalism raised by the current practices of the Board of Immigration Appeals. You keep coming up here, you get hammered, you have to go back and explain to these people that they're not doing a professional job.
Your concerns have been expressed in the past. I know that from my office. I've been at this office for over 15 years. And I've gotten published decisions from Judge Pelosi himself. It wins. I understand your points, Your Honor, but if I can return to this case, and the regulations permit the Board to adopt and affirm an immigration judge's decision based on that decision, we would state that the immigration judge's decision is supported by substantial evidence the petitioner has failed to establish that he's persecuted or has a well-founded fear of persecution on account of his being a whistleblower. In fact, we would submit, Your Honor, the record in this case shows otherwise. Petitioner, alleged persecutor, was removed from his position, has now gone to another position within the government. He was granted an amnesty after he was investigated by the government of Albania. But based on the merits of the case, we would find the petitioner failed to establish that the government of Albania does not investigate and is intertwined with the corruption that he here alleges, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mr. Weiland, let me tell you that. Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The point I was making as I ended that was brought up at the end by the government was regarding Minister Hasdaraga and his capability and inclination to persecute the petitioner. Two of the elements that are in the Madhurabi test from the Board of Immigration Appeals on when there's a fear of future persecution. And with that, he was removed from the defense minister position, yes, but then he became the acting minister of foreign affairs, another position of authority within the government. And the amnesty that he was granted did not cover the testimony that would have been provided by the petitioner against him. Finally, the adverse credibility findings that were made in the...
And the main thing is about this, I forgot his name, the defense minister.
As
he once said, he once told the petitioner here to mind his own business. That's about all we know about him, isn't it, in terms of the petitioner?
In terms of the petitioner, yes. He met with him on two occasions, and on both times he rebuffed the petitioner's attempts to bring this corruption to light.
Anything beyond that in terms of the petitioner, right?
In terms of the petitioner, we know that on the day he left the prosecutor's office to discuss the actions of Mr. Hasdaraga was the day he was shot outside of his home. But beyond that, he didn't leave a calling card or a note or anything to say that he was the individual that committed this persecution. And I believe that Elias Zacharias allows such evidence to be proved through circumstantial means, such as the previous individuals that have opposed Minister Hajduraga, and the fact that it was on the day he had left the prosecutor's office.
Okay, well, then let me just ask you, now, what is the Midwest Immigrant and Human Rights Center?
Yes, sir.
What is that?
Ms. Dickler should probably be able to answer that easier. I'm a private attorney who does pro bono work for them.
Okay, well.
You're a nonprofit legal service provider.
Is this a university? Is this funded by universities, or is this a...
No, funded
by... Well, we thank you very much for taking on this case, because clearly problems with these immigration cases, and we appreciate the pro bono work of people representing them. Okay, well, clearly the recess is 9:30.